It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you here. What a great way to start the week. Man, we've got some good stuff to talk to you about. First of all, I want you to remember these two words, near me. Near me. Near me is one of the top search terms currently in being used in Google, in Yahoo, and Bing, right? So maybe you should add near me to your website SEO. To your website's SEO, add the phrase near me. Maybe it might even make sense for you to have near me, insert maybe your name, near me, or insert your name near me. Dentist, near me. Doctor, near me. Bert Martinez, near me.com. Just thinking about it. But near me is the search term that is extremely popular right now in the Googleverse. You can also start adding it to your YouTube videos. YouTube video near me. And do that in the description and the tags. Somebody might type in, let's see, what might be something, maybe somebody's looking for, you're a dentist and somebody's looking for a video detailing what a teeth cleaning looks like, or maybe how to floss, or how do they extract teeth. And anyway, you add the search term near me to that video and it may get rank you up higher and therefore get you more views. That's what that's about. All right. Let's see, what else is happening that is worthy of your time? I have a couple more little hacks that I wanted to talk about, and let's see where I put them. Bear with me. Un momento, por favor. That is me making fun of somebody who doesn't speak real good Spanish. Un momento, por favor, is the way I would say it. Let's see. All right, so the other thing that might be worth doing is if you're into videos, right? If you're into videos, sometimes people get lost, right? Maybe you feel very comfortable in front of a camera and you know exactly what to say, but still it's good to be able to kind of keep this blueprint, if you will, in mind. So it could be something like, the first part is something like, hi, this is Bert Martinez, and today I'm going to be talking about XYZ, right? The benefit, right? So, hi, this is Bert Martinez, and today I'm going to talk to you about the five things to help you sell better. I'm going to show you five ways to increase your branding. I'm going to show you six ways to lose weight. The three things you must do to keep your teeth strong and white. So your name, what you're going to be talking about, right? Or again, if you are a service-oriented company, hi, this is Bert Martinez with XYZ Company, and today we're going to be talking about, you know, 1, 2, 3. So that way it's immediately within the video. It tells them why they should watch it, right? So that's the first thing you do. The second thing you do is maybe give them a quick story. Hey, so I don't know about you guys, but, you know, sometimes I'm not really sure how to floss. Or, you know, I used to get confused about how to turn the lights on in the house and, you know, and something. So maybe a quick story if you have one. And then the how-to. So who I am. What company, what you're going to learn about, quick story, get into the how-to, this is what you need to do, here are the three steps, here are the five things, and then finish up with what you just taught them, right? So it's kind of a four-step formula, if you will, on what your video content should look like. It gives you a blueprint, if you will, so you don't get lost, right? And so here's the deal. Sometimes somebody may feel really good about their video skills, right? And then they will kind of start the conversation and get it going that way, right? The challenge is that some people, so the challenge is because I'm pretty good, I feel comfortable in front of the video, I may carry on too long. I may meander here and there. Now, maybe you don't feel so comfortable in front of a video. Meandering is not your problem. But you want a formula, and that's a nice little formula to kind of get you in, you know, get you moving in the right direction. Does that make sense? Are you with me on that? Do you feel me, my brothers and my sisters of marketing? Anyway, let's go with that. Four-step formula to making your videos bigger and better. I love it, man. I love it. All right, so a couple of good little hacks near me, and then of course who would like to make your videos a little bit easier, smoother, more formulaic, right? All right, so what else is happening? Oh, I know, YouTube. Speaking of videos, I can't believe I forgot this. So I think that you and about three other people have not subscribed to my YouTube channel. All right, maybe might be more than three other people, but you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel. Why not? So please do me a favor. Go to youtube.com/BurtJMartinez/BurtJMartinez. You can probably just go to Google and type in Burt Martinez, and you'll see my lovely bald head. And just go over there and subscribe to my channel. It's free. You get awesome videos. I'm doing some videos with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Randy Couture and Tom Hopkins. And I think you would benefit greatly from going over there. And, you know, subscribe to my YouTube channel. And I apologize. I can't believe I just did what I did, which is I took a bite of an apple. Didn't mean to be so rude on the ear munching, but it is money for lunch, and I thought I'd grab some quick lunch, or brunch in my case. But anyway, youtube.com/BurtJMartinez, then send me an email. Let me know that you subscribe, Burt@BurtMartinez.com. Send me an email, connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Let me know that you subscribe. I'll send you some free stuff. All right. And you know what? If you'd like, let me know. I'll give you a shout out here on Money for Lunch. Karen subscribed to my YouTube channel not too long ago. So did Adam. Susan also subscribed. And let's see who else. I believe it's pronounced Kareemni. So thank you. Thank you, everybody, for subscribing. And, you know, my YouTube videos, I guarantee you'll make your life so much better. You'll perform better in bed. You'll perform better in your job. It's just that good. There's some funny stuff on there, too. There's a great story by Franco Colombo, one of Arnold Schwarzenegger's best friends ever. And he talked about some of the pranks. Not even pranks, some of the things that Arnold would do, because he would forget to bring his posing trunks. And then I was able to do a quick video with Arnold and Franco, and got Arnold's take on that story. So that's also available on YouTube. You can grab it there, and it is funny stuff, funny stuff. What else is coming up? Kelly LeBrock. That's a good YouTube video. But anyway, youtube.com, Burt J. Martinez. I did a video on the fly there with a gentleman who needed help with his business, gave him some tips on how he could double his sales. Another video there talking about crushing your fears with fear, and it's pretty hot to trot. Then I did a nice, neat little video that involved a $2 bill and my good friend, Dr. Steve G. Jones. We talked about position, passion, and profit, and how a $2 bill in some cases can be worth more than a $2 bill. And anyway, just a lot of fun stuff. So the videos are anywhere from how to fun stuff to just different takes, different ideas. So anyway, totally worth subscribing. YouTube.com/ Burt J. Martinez. Or again, you can just go to YouTube, put in Burt Martinez, and you'll grab my stuff, I think, fairly quick. All right. Just appreciate that so very much. All right. So anyway, back to the hacks. Near Me, add it to all your SEO. You could probably even write an article on Near Me. It'll probably rank fairly quick. Then the four-step formula that should be in all your videos, right? The intro, fairly easy, very formulaic. Hi, this is Burt Martinez, and today we're talking about XYZ, so you can do 1, 2, 3. Very, very formulaic, but it works. And then you tell them a quick little story, and maybe then the two or three or four tips you're going to talk about, you break those down, and then you wrap it up with, hey, we just talked about, you know, XYZ, so you can 1, 2, 3. Let me know what you want to do. Let me know what you think in the comments. Oh, and then you want to ask them to share the video as well as subscribe to your channel. So share the video. That's number 5. So it's not a 4-step formula. It's a 5-step formula. And it works very well. All right. So I got to figure out. I'm doing a little rambling because my first guest was a little late. And that's okay. That's the great thing about, doing a live show. Sometimes, you know, stuff happens and nothing you can do about it. All right. So I do want to mention this. Look, whether you're Donald Duck or Donald Trump, we all have our limitations, and these limitations are primarily set by us, and they're primarily set by this thing called fear. So how do you get over your fear? And this is what, and this goes into much deeper detail on the video I did, but I want to give you a kind of an overview. You have to find something else that scares you even more. For example, I'm getting ready to compete in a bodybuilding show. I haven't competed since I was a young man. I'm 55 years old, so it's been 35 friggin' years since I've competed. I'm scared. Not to mention training can be scary and painful, dieting, all that stuff. But you know what? I was actually more afraid of not doing it. I was more afraid of being an average 55-year-old guy. This, you know, by getting ready for this competition, I already have my 6-pack back. All right, to be very transparent, it's 4-pack. But, you know, I'm getting there, right? I went from 25% body fat, I'm down to 15% body fat. So I was more afraid of being average. I was more afraid of looking bad in a bathing suit. I was more afraid of not doing it than doing it. I know I'm going to get up there. I'll probably be the skinniest, oldest guy up there. My posing routine won't be very good, but I'm doing it because it's the alternative is even scarier, right? Then the other thing that you want to look at is, you know, what are the pluses to doing it? Well, I mentioned for me some of the pluses is I get to do it. I get to be above average. I get to look good in a bathing suit. And I get to be in great shape. So some of the pluses. But you can look at whatever fear you have. Maybe your fear is cold calling. Man, you hate getting on the phone and making cold calls. I get that. What scares you more than that? How about bankruptcy? How about letting your family down? How about not being able to pay rent, not being able to save for retirement, not being able to get your kids what they need when they need it? Right? That's scarier to me. Getting rejected on the phone hurts. Not being able to take care of your family hurts more. That's scary. That's, to me, using your fear to crush your fears, right? Using a bigger fear to crush your fears. So I'm just throwing that at you. Fear runs in our lives. We're constantly overcoming fear. Again, whether you're Donald Duck or Donald Trump, we're constantly overcoming fear. And you published one book. Publishing a second book is a little bit easier. But what's stopping you from getting it done? Fear. You know, this fear theme is a consistent in our lives. And we're constantly butting heads against it, right? We're pushing against it. And maybe sometimes it's not fear. Maybe it's really pain. Maybe the thought of having to stop to write your book is more painful than it is fearful, right? You know you have the book there, but you don't want to take the time to write it. So it's maybe not fear. Maybe it's just pain. So how do you get past it? You got to find something that hurts even more. You got to find something that scares you even more. All right. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And if you have questions, if you want to reach out to me, Bert@BertMartinez.com. If you have a show suggestion, a topic, a guest, Bert@BertMartinez.com. You can always connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. I don't do any more than those. I think that's enough. So always love hearing from you good people. You guys are the reason that we were the first show, independent show like this, to be featured on iHeartRadio. Isn't that amazing? You were the first. We were the first show, and that was because of your willingness to support and promote our show and make us number one. So we appreciate that. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back right
after
this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. And I am excited for my next guest, Charlie Ryan. Charlie Ryan, the recruitment queen. See, I knew that would throw you off. Charlie Ryan, the recruitment queen, was established by Charlie Ryan as a result of her 20 plus years experience working within recruitment. Charlie's passion is to help people, and having seen it firsthand in the recruitment industry, she is set up the recruitment queen to provide and support candidates with the skills and knowledge to job hunt successfully. Because let me tell you, that's one of the toughest jobs, is looking for a job. Charlie Ryan, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. Okay, now I got to ask you this. Now, the recruitment queen, do you specialize with helping women, or do you help both men and women? Talk about that a little bit.
We help everybody navigate the nightmare of the job hunting process. A couple of things you said there, so accurate. It is nearly a full-time job getting a job. And if you don't understand what to do, then you can end up either in the wrong job, compromising because you just didn't know what to do to get the right job, just facing rejection after rejection because you don't
Yeah, you know, we're having a little bit of a glitch there, and I think it's good now, but Charlie, are you okay? You got me?
Job hunting process of today, and we have everybody, men, young, old, and women, you name it. If you've got, we can support you to get your mind, get the skill, and find the right opportunity.
Sure. Hey, Charlie, let's do this. Charlie, can you hear me?
I've still got you.
Okay. Because we're having an issue with your signal glitching in and out. And so what I'm going to have you do is I'm going to have you call us right back to see if we can acquire a better signal.
Okay.
So
yeah.
If you'll hang up and call us right back, that'd be great. All right, so we're going to wait for Charlie Ryan, the recruitment queen, to call back so we can get this, you know, the show back on the road, so to speak. Yeah. But you know what? The thing about recruitment, it's interesting, you know, because as employers, we need to know how to recruit. And as job candidates, we need to know how to deal with this recruitment situation. Charlie Ryan, thank you for calling back.
That's okay. That sounds a bit better.
Yeah, it sounds a lot better. All right. So let's talk about this. I want to dive into a very, very controversial subject, and that is women's pay.
Yes.
Let's talk about women getting paid the same as men, and give me your thoughts on this.
It's I have to say it's a really controversial issue in the UK at the moment, equal pay for women and men. And I do agree that a person is worth a certain amount of money, whether they're a man or a woman. But I do feel that sometimes some of the laws that we've brought in, because obviously the Equal Pay Act and other laws we've got are really pushing for women who are in the same job as men to be paid the same. Now, it's not that I don't want women to be paid the same, and obviously, you know, being a woman, I know you might think I would fight the female corner on this. It's not that I don't want that, but I do feel that if you need a law to fight for that right for you, part of me believes that you are not able to command your worth in earning maybe the same as the man who is able to fight. And my other issue with this is I actually believe in some cases women are worth more than men in that role because of other things a woman will bring to a role that a man won't necessarily. And I've earned more than some of my male counterparts in my corporate career many years ago. And I feel that you should command your worth and sex shouldn't come into it. And I don't like or believe the government and the legal system should spend time and money creating rules that actually we should fight for ourselves and not base it around our sex.
Gotcha. And you know what? But and I agree with you. That's totally true. Okay. That in the perfect utopia that we're not living in, and you know what? That would be the way to do it, right? Men and women would be paid on what their value is to the company. And not based on their sex or their color or anything like that. Unfortunately, we don't live in that environment. I mean, bottom line is, you know what? I have a great experiment at my house. I have two boys and five girls, and so I see that society treats boys differently than they do girls. They expect certain behavior from girls that they don't expect from boys. So we have this bias that's already built in makes it harder for females to compete the same as men unless they happen to be not good but very good.
Do I agree with that? I'm going to say to that, I think, I know, you're making me think now. I'm not sure I agree with that. I do think it depends on the industry. So I think, for example, that traditionally there are certain fields where I would agree with you, I think, but I'm not sure that comes down to pay either. But I think the journey for a woman to get where a man is in, say, engineering or aeronautical and those sorts of industries, I think is a tougher journey. I do. But I think when they're there, they are able to command their worth. And I think the original law that was brought in was really about a lot of the lower levels where men and women were on lower level jobs. And you're right, they weren't paid the same. But that education, that's happened now. And if a woman goes in as an administrator or a PA or a man does, they will get exactly the same. That the money now is based around the role. The argument that's being had at the moment in the UK is at the senior level, the corporate board level. And I believe if the woman needs the law at corporate board level to fight on her behalf for her money and she cannot command her worth so that her male counterpart see it, I think that's a problem because I don't think she should even hold that role on that board. And that's not being as good as men. That's the role, the level of competency I would expect at that level, that you can command your worth and negotiate and lead a team.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think you make a valid point because it does come down. It does really come down to commanding that level. And I like the fact that you made that distinction that we're not talking about, you know, entry level positions where everybody gets started, more or less get started the same level.
Yes.
You're looking at, you know, at something else entirely. And I think that's really worth considering. So let's talk about this, kind of a cousin to what we're talking about. What about age discrimination? Do we, you know, what's your take on age discrimination and age laws?
Yeah, I have quite a similar feeling on it, actually. I mean, I do own a recruitment company as well. So everything that I'm talking about, I'm seeing through the consultants at the recruitment company firsthand. Now, we will get on average between 400 and 600 CVs in a day. So you can imagine the breadth of age that we're going to see in that, you know, in that volume. And I have to say, again, people do value experience. I mean, age discrimination was brought in however many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, and it was, you know, more than that, 7 or 8 years ago. And it was done to help the mature workforce, to stop employers saying that they wanted somebody young and dynamic. And the issue we've got is that an employer will still get the person they want. They will find a way around the law. And again, my take on it is, if you have got the right way about you, no matter how old you are, you will be right for the job. Now, we place everything from your 16-year-old to your probably the oldest 62-year-old would have been the last, the highest placement we've probably made in the last few months. And I have to say that 62-year-old had so much energy and dynamism, much more than a 40-year-old. And we had no problem getting the company to see this guy, even though he was 62. So if you are the right person for the job. Now, what age discrimination has also done, it's created a real minefield for an employer because an employer can no longer go, do you know what, Charlie? We want someone who's mid-40s because that's probably the level of experience that they've got. We're a fairly outgoing, sociable team, so we want the person to be part of that and be part of that culture. And they're not able to say that anymore. And now what we end up doing is you have an older person who actually isn't very comfortable with the social interaction of that much younger team. They wouldn't want the job anyway, but we have to now make sure their application is put forward, even though they won't fit in there and they wouldn't want the job even if they went for an interview. And that's what age discrimination has done. It's not good.
No, it's not good. It's not good. And you know what? I'm going to use an example that, again, talking about what you're saying. If you look at the Hollywood industry, the film industry, which is a perfect example of a place where youth is celebrated,
yes,
and age, you know, the older you get, the harder it is for you to find roles. But we have seen people like Sylvester Stallone, Liam Neeson, who are in their 50s,
yeah,
60s, even approaching 70 with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, who's in his mid-60s, you know, that usually go to much younger people because they still bring it. It's like you're talking,
yes,
about. They still have,
yes,
what it takes to make it happen. They're still a box office draw, but they make the role believable. And so as long as somebody, just like what we're talking about with the female thing, just as long as you have the skills and you can bring it, then you can command what you want.
Yes. And that's what I support. I really support that. I think, you know, stop hiding behind the laws, because all the laws are doing, they're creating a litigation society. So they're allowing candidates to find a reason as to why they didn't get that job. Oh, I was discriminated against. Oh, I was a man, you know, or they wanted a woman for that job. Or, oh, I'm too old or I'm too young. Actually, you know what? Spend your time and energy finding the job that is right for you and go through the process. And if you were right for it, it won't matter whether you're a man or a woman or young or old. It really won't.
Right. And to, you know, to further illustrate that, here's the deal, guys. If you have to get a job by force, meaning you sue your way into a company, you're not going to want to stay there. You're not going to be anybody's friend. You're going to be a pariah. People are going to avoid you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And,
so
and it's like candidates not, that – sorry, it's even like candidates that leave companies under a cloud and they say, oh, they got rid of me for whatever reason, and then they sue them afterwards. Actually going to your next company, they do not want to come near you because they're afraid,
yeah,
of how it might end with them. And I think candidates forget this, you know, and my best piece of advice, if a company wants you out, they will find a way, but there is a way where it can happen much, much more comfortably if you communicate and hold them to account on they want you out. So say to them, look, I know you want me gone. I don't want to stay somewhere I'm not wanted. What can we agree for me to leave? Let's talk money.
Right, right. You know, a good example of that, back to Hollywood, is look at Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien was getting paid millions of dollars to host The Tonight Show. They wanted Jay Leno back because the ratings had dropped. And they said, look, let's agree on a number. And I believe he got like $50 million, which if you have to be fired publicly, that's not so bad.
No. Exactly.
I mean,
so,
I'd like to be fired like,
yeah,
that at least once or twice a year.
Me too.
All right, let's talk about finding a job. Let's talk about candidate empowerment in the job hunting process. How do I, as a candidate, with, you know, nowadays, you know, when I was growing up in the job market, I could always meet the people who I might, who had at least their first chance of hiring me, right? Whether it was the,
yeah,
manager themselves or the company owner or the HR person, I could always meet them. Nowadays, it's almost impossible because everything's done with a website interface form. So how do I get empowered?
Right. Now, and this is a very, very important part of the process. So you're absolutely right. All of the jobs now are put out across however many job boards and job sites, and they're advertised on things like Monster and Total Jobs and Reed, and it's that is where a candidate job hunts. But the issue is, on those job boards where somebody has put a job advert, the advert is exactly what it says on the tin. It is an advert. And when you see an advert, you never just buy a product. If you see a TV advert, you never just go and buy a product. And actually, a job advert is exactly the same. It is written to attract the world. It is written to attract so many people in the hope that someone will be good. So your job as a candidate to empower yourself and not waste time in applying for jobs that will never be right for you is to understand that you now need to do research when you see that advert. And your job now is to call up whoever has advertised, whether it's an agency or a company, and start questioning them on the detail of the job. Because you know very, very little from an advert. It is too broad. And once you start questioning them and you understand what it is they want to see on a CV, you're also starting the touch points of marketing yourself. So if you think of a couple of things Chuck was saying earlier, prior to when I was on the marketing side of businesses, what you have to remember is, as a candidate, you are taking yourself to market. You are the product that a company is going to buy. And if you can see yourself as a product, you need to understand the channels to use. If you're using the job boards, like any product you take to market, a company might send an email, but they will always follow up with a phone call. But more often than not, they'll phone up first and find out who's looking after the marketing or the product, or who do they need. Candidate needs to do exactly the same. Who's looking after this job that you've advertised? Who can I speak to get more information about it? And then when they get through, and they're then able to ask more questions, what is it you're looking to see on a CV? What would make you rule somebody out? How can I make sure that I get through to the first interview with you? The art of telephone communication has fallen down dramatically, and all you have to do is become more involved in the telephone, and you are already streets ahead of a number of other candidates. And I do mean streets. And I have got an example for you. We had 400 applications for a receptionist role, 400. Literally, wow. All just emailing us. Now, you think about what a receptionist does. They pick up the phone. They pick up the phone and represent your company. Only one person called me out of those 400 applications. And interestingly, her CV was so bad, we deleted it. So we'd actually knocked her out of the process in our four-second screen, because that's all you've got, by the way, 4 seconds on a CV. So we'd knocked her out, but the fact that she called us, she threw herself right back into the process, and she was so good on the phone, her CV became irrelevant. Interestingly, she was up against three other candidates that all went for interview, and she got the job.
How funny is that? How interesting.
Amazing.
Is that? Yeah, and it just goes to show you that you can overcome a bad CV or a bad resume by making that personal connection.
Absolutely. It's
yeah, that,
I can't explain how important the communication is, because you've got to remember the CV is just like the piece of direct mail. It is nothing without everything behind it. How does anybody get a person, the characteristics of a person, how do they get that on a bit of paper? It's just, you can't do it. You just can't do it.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. Can you take this personal touch too much? For example, she made a phone call and that convinced you to give her a second look. Would a handwritten note have helped? Would, stopping by the office, is that taking
Yes.
things too far?
The handwritten note might take too long to be seen, because post in recruitment is not opened that regularly. In the legal field, it still is, and in the financial world, but not really in the recruitment world. So I would definitely say dropping by to hand in your CV to make sure they got it can be a very, very nice way of just getting an opportunity to speak to the person responsible for the job. So we call that doorstepping. So you're literally, it's a bit like cold calling, really. And again, you're cold calling on behalf of yourself. So don't be too pushy. There is a fine line, I think. And the humbleness, we do look for people to be humble, confident, yet humble. So you're appreciative of the fact you're taking up somebody's time. So how you make the approach, I think, is crucial. But yeah, we have no problem with somebody dropping in their CV, turning up, even to find out a little bit more about the company and get a culture, a feel for the culture to make sure that it is right for them.
Yeah, I love that so very much. I think those are something that, again, anybody can do. And in today's world, I think it sets you apart, right? I mean, at least people are going to say, you know what, Charlie, this person just dropped by their CV personally, or maybe I've talked to this person a couple of times. I think we should consider this person. That little phone call, that drop by, or this doorstep, as you're talking about, might make the difference, as in the example you gave, whether or not you're even considered for the job.
Absolutely. It makes a massive difference in today's world when everybody is hiding behind email and pressing the apply button and being a CV in hundreds of others for every job.
Now, let me ask you this. What about things like having having published a book, things of that nature? Do you think that helps or hurts, or it's not really or is it a non-event?
I think it has to be relevant. People sometimes, they own the fact that they're an author of something, and that's what they become. They become the fact they're an author of the book, as opposed to owning what they were in the beginning and talking about that, and then the book was a sideshow. So people become a little bit status-driven as an author sometimes, and
right.
then they end up selling the wrong thing. That's not what an employer wants. So
yep.
I think as it demonstrates your expertise, and we're all for it as supporting evidence, but it should only be brought into the conversation at the right, unless obviously you're going to see your publicist and then it is all about the book.
Right, right. Well, and like you said, it has to be relevant. I mean, if you're an attorney and your best-selling book is a fictional novel about, aliens from outer space, it's not relevant. But
no.
if you
and it shouldn't
are,
come up at all then.
That's right. It shouldn't come up at all unless the recruiter himself or herself bring it up. However, if you are applying for an engineer position or whatever position and your book is relevant to the subject matter, then yeah, now it becomes a conversation that that might give you an additional look or an additional credibility piece. So I love that. I love that angle so much. Charlie Ryan, we're out of time. Would love to bring you back and talk more about finding the right job. And maybe next time we'll bring you back and let's talk about finding the right employee. We've talked about finding the right job. Let's talk about finding the right employee. Charlie Ryan, therecruitmentqueen.co.uk. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
You bet. Good stuff there about finding your ideal job and maybe some tricks and strategies to break the crowd, break loose from this crowd, stand out from all the piles of resumes and CVs that you're dealing with. So, it was good stuff there. Anyway, we're going to take a really short break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right, we're back. We're back talking with Kelly Williams. Before the show started, I'm excited to have Kelly Williams. Kelly Williams Brown is the New York Times bestselling author of Adulting, How to Become a Grown-Up in 468 Easy-ish Steps, which has been translated into 9 languages. Previously, she was featured reporter and award-winning humor columnist for the Statesman's Journal, a daily newspaper in Salem, Oregon, which is where she lives now with her dog, Eleanor, who may, in fact, be a Muppet. Kelly Williams, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. And I just love this title of, Adulting, How to Become a Grown-Up in just in 468 easy-ish steps. It automatically invites you, lets you know you're going to be in for a good time when you read this book.
Well, thank you so much. And, I wanted to bring the same kind of sensibility and approachability to my new book, Gracious, but It all started with adulting, and I like to think of it as if adulting is about how to get your own life in order, figure out how bleach works, know when to ask for a raise at work, then gracious is sort of advanced adulting, if you will. How do we treat the people around us? How do we make every interaction, no matter how short, the best that it can be?
So let's before we dive into this, let's talk a little bit about gracious. So you are hanging out or whatever, and all of a sudden this idea comes to you. What was the catalyst? What made you think, okay, gracious needs to be written?
Well, I mean, in certain ways, I've been wanting to write this book all my life. I'm grew up in the South from New Orleans originally, and I've just always admired the gracious people in my life. In the same way that when I wrote Adulting, I was ready to try to make myself into an adult. Now that I had gotten those basics down, I thought, and mostly women, you know, there's mostly women in this book, but there are definitely gracious men too. I thought they have this incredible way about them where they have an ease and a comfort in the world. And not only that, but when you're with them, you feel that. And so basically, just like with adulting, I would think of the people who embody this quality and go to them and say, how do you do it? How can I be like you? And they gave me so much wonderful stuff.
I love that. I love that. All right. So let's start off because I love some of these ideas here. So let's start off with this. How do we keep in touch with friends without a phone?
Oof. Well, I, for one, hate how many text messages and emails and Facebook messages and everything I get every day. And I feel like the reason that it really frustrates me is that I do not have time to keep up 60 different channels of correspondence and actually, you know, have a life, feed my dog,
right,
do my work. And I got a great tip from a friend of mine, Alex, who is definitely a very digitally connected person, very successful. But what she has done is let people know that, A, she has what she calls a correspondence hour, which I love, every Sunday evening, where those non-super time-sensitive emails, she gets back to all of them at once, and she's able to really give people a good response. But beyond that, she lets people know, hey, we might not see each other all the time, and I'm trying to spend more time away from my phone, but the idea there is that when we do spend time together, it's going to be really high quality. So she's not that person that I'm going to text back and forth with about stupid things all day, but when we get together, she's going to make me a delicious dinner, I'm going to make her a delicious dinner, and we're really going to enjoy each other's company without the constant chirping of phones.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny you should say that, because it seems like the kind of friends that you're talking about, the kind of friends that you're going to, you know, sit down and make a nice meal for, aren't necessarily the friends that are constantly chirping at you anyway, right? They're the kind of friends that you go out with, and it's an event you connect with. And it doesn't mean that you never text them. Obviously, you do because you have that connection. But it's a deeper friendship than a lot of this Facebook, you know, chirpy stuff.
Absolutely, because it's that real human connection. It's not just these little, you know, I'm thinking of a sentence or two to say to you, and that's all I need to do until the next time you say a sentence or two to me. And in the book, you know, I have noticed that some of my friends, if I text them and they don't text me back right away, I think, oh my God, she's dead. Or if she's not dead, she's furious at me. Do I know why she might be furious? No, because those people, I have the expectation that they're going to always get right back to me. Whereas some of my friends, I'm thinking here of my dear friend Taya, she takes a while to text back. And so when she texts me, I don't immediately think she's dead or she's mad. I think Taya doesn't text back and forth constantly. And a side benefit is that when I'm in person with those friends, we tend to have a much better time because they're not constantly on their phones.
Mm. Yeah. You know, that itself is a lesson in being gracious, because nothing is worse than trying to interact with somebody who is constantly on the phone.
Absolutely. I mean, we don't really think about it this way because it's become so common to be on the phone at all times. But whenever you pick up and look at your phone or do something with your phone when you're with someone else, that's saying whatever might be happening somewhere else is more important than what is happening between us right now. And that's not a kind thing to say. And it's not that we don't need to look at our phones. You know, sometimes during the workday, especially if I'm meeting a friend for lunch, she might really be on call and have to have that phone out, and that's okay. But when it's really, if you are trying to have that quality time with someone, looking at your phone and typing back and forth does not say anything good to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny, too, because I'm sure that you've seen this. I talk about this quite often, and other people talk about this quite often. You will walk into a restaurant and you will see two young people and they're both on their phones.
I know.
Versus interacting with the person in front of them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to sound like a total Ebenezer Scrooge on this. I think if you have that really, that closeness with the person where you understand that, you know, they're going to check their phone, you're going to check your phone, it's no big deal, we're just going to hang out all day, and sometimes we'll be working, sometimes we'll be chatting, then that's one thing. I mean, for example, my boyfriend, if there's a question of trivia, he and I are exactly the same in that we immediately want to know. We need to know right now who built the Brooklyn Bridge. So when we do it to each other, it's fine because we have that understanding. But yeah, you see people who are alone together and it's really sad. And for me, at least, I have never gotten, you know, a tenth of the satisfaction from, you know, a tweet reply or a Facebook message that I have from having a great conversation with a friend. They're just incomparable experiences.
Right, right. And it's so funny, too, that you say that, because one of the things that I've heard so many millennial experts, quote, millennial experts, say is that millennials are into experiences and not having things and all that other stuff. But to me, they're missing exactly what you said. They're missing some of the best experiences right in front of them. This experience,
you know,
of being actually connected to a human.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think part of that is that it is really hard if you're used to something to step away from it. You know, I am as guilty of this as anyone. I am addicted to my phone. I'm used to having literally all of the world's knowledge at my fingertips at any moment.
Sure.
And so it can be hard when you're in that mode, which is part of, you know, my point with Gracious, is that it's not the end of the world if you're one of those people who is really glued to your phone. But I think the first step is just looking at what it's giving you. And again, to go back to my friend Alex, she was saying that at one point she was really big on Twitter, and then she did a calculation between, you know, composing a tweet, kind of workshopping it, getting it up there, replying to the other replies on the tweet, times how many, you know, times a day she does that. She calculated out that if she continued, she was going to spend literally 9 years of her life on Twitter. And she just had to say, is that what I want? When I look back on my life, is that what I want? And it's easy to fall into habits and not think, how are we spending this limited time? What are we doing? Does this add value to our life and the people around us? Or is it 9 years of chit-chatting back and forth on Twitter? Which, if that does give you satisfaction, if you think, yes, that's what I want, then do it. There's no moral judgment here. But I think for a lot of us, examining it is important.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I like what you said there. It really, you know, your friend did a calculated decision there. She said, based on my investment of time, right, versus the return I'm going to get, it's not worth it to me. Now, for some people, they say, hey, listen, man, it's totally worth it to me. I'm a Twitter person. I'm connected. This is how people get to know me. I'm all about the Twitter. And as you said, there's no moral judgment there. For some people, I mean, they literally, we know people that have millions and millions of followers and they are, fairly well known in Twitter and, you know, good for them.
Mm-hmm.
But it is about the value, I think, that you're going to get. Let's talk about this. We all know to say thank you and please, but what interested me is that you had something to say about hello and goodbye. Talk about this.
Yeah, so this is from Nora, who is one of the most gracious humans I know. And I was asking her, you know, Nora, what's one small thing that people can do? And she said, well, we always think about please and thank you, and people try to remember to say that. But when you walk into a room or see a person, just to say hello to them. And then when you're done with the interaction, saying, you know, goodbye, it was so nice to meet you, or goodbye, it was lovely to see you again, whatever it might be. That just, it's such a small gesture, but it says, I see you. You're a human being. You're present. You're here. And I think a lot of times the ugliness that we see, whether that's online or in, you know, partisan politics, whatever it might be, I think a lot of it comes from people feeling like they're not heard, like they're invisible and no one cares. And to just make the habit of always acknowledging the humans around you and the fact that they're a human, you're a human, we're all here together, is a great way to sort of flex those muscles in literally the easiest way possible. I mean, that is not a big lift.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? And I think that to your point, when you find somebody that's iconic and you mm-hmm. know, whoever that iconic person is in your life, that celebrity, and they have the graciousness, you know, to address you and be present with you and say thank you and goodbye and hello, it really has an impact on us that this person that we value so much is still, for lack of better terms, human enough to connect with us on these simple terms. It's still that important.
Absolutely. It really is. And you know, whether it's someone special or someone, you know, not quite as special, to feel that way. You know, Nora said that she sort of thought a little bit about the kind of customer service she gets when she's in a nice department store or a boutique and how good it makes her feel to, you know, feel like people are saying hello and thank you and goodbye and trying to help her. And she said, I don't see why I can't try to give, you know, good customer service to humanity.
Oh, I like that. What a great phrase, give good customer service to humanity. All right, let me ask you mm-hmm. this. You know, we're all busy people, especially, mm-hmm. You know, if you're running a small store or a small business and you have, you know, one or two employees, and at the same time, maybe people are, you know, not only your family making demands, you have employees making demands, maybe you have customers making your demands. Give me mm-hmm. the secret. You have a secret on how to get out of anything without offending someone.
Oh, gosh. Well, so this is probably more for social invitations, although I think it could work in business too, although I am many things, but I would not necessarily call myself a businesswoman. But, and sadly, I'm a little bummed to give this away because it means I can never use it again. So first off, if someone asks you to something optional, you know, that social event, whatever it is, and you really don't want to go, don't forget, you can just say no thank you. That's not the end of the world. You can say, oh gosh, I can't that night. And if you want to see them or have future invites issued to you, then you can always say, but what if, could we do XYZ? However, if some people we know are pretty pushy and just saying, oh, I'm sorry, I can't, isn't good enough for them. So for those people, I go with this. I'm so sorry, I am doing something with my family that night. I hope y'all have so much fun. And what I don't tell them is that I am my own family, and the thing that I'm going to be doing with my family, aka me, is watching an HBO show that I absolutely love and chilling out after a long weekend rather than going to something I really don't want to go to.
Oh, wow, I love it. I love it. I love that so very, very much. I think it's fantastic. What a great little, a great little strategy here. I mean, that right there will pay big dividends to all our listeners. They're all going, yes, that's a great idea. I love it. while we're talking about etiquette, you have a certain mm-hmm. etiquette for one night stands. I figure we go a little edgy today and talk about this one night stand etiquette.
Sure. So one thing that I think is really important to remember, just generally speaking, is that our best manners should be for those people who are close to us. One woman that I interviewed, I asked her what she loved about her husband, and she said, well, one thing is he's always so polite. He always says good morning and holds the door and asks how my day has been. And maybe sometimes we're physically close to someone, but not emotionally or long-term close, but they still deserve
you know, those very basic things of graciousness and manners, which is, you know, kindness, compassion, respect, and honesty. So if you can't even find it in your heart to treat this person outside of the bedroom, I mean, inside, however they want, but outside of the bedroom with those qualities, then I think first it's a good idea to ask, you know, do we really need this particular liaison? Expect that they are going to want to spend the night in your bed. And again, if you can't handle the very idea of waking up next to them, then, you know, maybe a location other than your bed would be better for this. So assuming this and assuming that, you know, everyone might get thirsty, so a nice pitcher of ice water and two glasses, you know, by the bedside table. This is just for guests in general, but I like to have a little bowl of things in my guest bedroom that people might forget, you know, a toothbrush, a mini toothpaste, some little deodorant wipes, things like that, a sleep mask, melatonin. So, you know, you can certainly grab that out of the guest bedroom or and put it up in your room. And finally, don't forget that if you need a meal afterwards, carbonara is so easy and so delicious.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's fantastic. The book is called Gracious.
Good customer service,
and,
man.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And so first of all, you know, you and I connected via Twitter, and I love when you can go to Twitter and see what I saw, which is it's Kelly Williams Brown, and the Twitter handle is @thegraciousbook. And you have there in a big headline, "Don't be a dick," which I thought, you know, that itself is a great title for a book, right?
That really would be a very accurate title, but I sort of thought about the women I was interviewing, many of whom are these very genteel, gracious women in their 70s and 80s, and I thought, that might be a little, hello, I'd like you to be in my book called Don't Be a Dick.
Yeah. Might be less than gracious.
Yeah, a little bit of a hard sell. There.
A little bit of a hard sell, no pun intended. Let's talk about this real quick. I want to wrap it up with you know, something that I thought was kind of interesting, and that is you talk about one of the tips or strategies you talk about is what you can learn from filming yourself talking while eating. How did this come about, and what did you learn?
So I will say in advance that this, you know, hopefully anyone who actually tries this will think, oh, this is great. There's absolutely no problem here. However, I like to think that I was raised with some pretty strict manners, including table manners. And yet I think we slip sometimes and, oh, this is so gross. But you'll think, okay, well, maybe if I just sort of, you know, put my hand over my mouth or sort of shove the food to the side. Like, this one point is so important that I must get it out right now. And
right.
The truth of the matter is that if we can just see ourselves doing that, you know, like I said, you might be in the clear, or you might think, oh my goodness, I never want to do that again. So just, you know, if it's been a minute since you've really thought about those table manners, it's a good thing to do, because part of being a good, you know, dinner guest or any kind of guest really is not creating a lot of offensive sounds or smells, or in this case, sights.
Yeah. And you know what? It's so funny because until I saw this, I'm thinking, wow, I wonder what I look like when I eat. Because you're absolutely right. Some of us do the whole, you know, I'm going to cover my mouth while I get this point across to you, right? Because as you said, it's so earthly important that I tell you this thing I got to tell
right.
you. Let me cover my mouth and have it full of food. You know,
right.
It's just funny. But you know what? Now, so let me ask you this, because etiquette seems almost so, I don't know. So 1940s, so 1950s. I mean, come on, we're in the, you know, we're almost on 2020. Is etiquette that important nowadays?
Oh, I think it's more important now than it's ever been before. You know, not to get too serious, but you know, I think whether you're left or right or whomever, you turn on the TV and you just see people being incredibly unkind and incredibly rude to each other. And I don't know what the solution to bring us together as a country is, and I'm sure it's a big, you know, it's a big question and it's a multifaceted answer, but I know for a fact that being kind, being civil, being able to listen, being able to listen to those you disagree with, that has to be part of the solution. There is no version of fixing this that doesn't involve civility and kindness. So I would say, if you think of manners as, oh, this oyster fork gets deployed at X moment but not Y, then yeah, maybe that is not really applicable to most of our lives. But if you think of manners as like the manner in which you live your life, then I think it's always important, and especially now.
We're going to end on that note because I totally agree with you. I think being gracious and having manners is going to bring us closer together, no matter where you're from, no matter your gender, no matter your political leaning. You know, Kelly Williams, this has been so much fun. And the book is available when? I know it's coming out soon.
It's actually out right now.
All right. It's available now at Amazon or wherever good books are sold. The book, again, is called Gracious. The author, Kelly Williams. And Kelly, thank you so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a great talk.
All righty. Good stuff there from Kelly William Brown. And she is a New York Times best-selling author. Her first book, Adulting, How to Become a Grown-Up in 468 Easy-ish Steps. And her latest best-selling book, Gracious. And it's a lot of fun. I enjoyed her so very much. I've learned some things, and I'm thinking I'm going to do the whole filming myself while I eat test to see how grotesque my manners actually are. As in all things, I'm grateful that you guys are here. We appreciate your support. We appreciate you guys interacting with us on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and on Facebook. On Instagram. We appreciate you connecting with me on YouTube. And most of all, we appreciate you listening and your comments. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.